scratching under a steel needle. When that time comes, Rick Martin will really be dead. Dead as a doornail. And I hate to see it happen. That's the story, and it could never be called a grand, tragic theme. It does not depict the fall of a noble person from high to low estate. Rick Martin never got anywhere near high estate, though he did make a lot of money for a while. But it is a story that has the ring of truth and an overtone or two. It is the story of a number of things, of the gap between the man's musical ability and his ability to fit into his own life, of the difference between the demands of expression and the demands of life here below, and finally, of the difference between good and bad in a Native American art form, jazz music. Because there's good in this music, and there's bad. There is music that is turned out sweet in hotel ballrooms, and there is music that comes right out of the genuine urge and doesn't come for money. The story ends with death. Our Mr. Martin, from the moment he began fooling around with pianos, was riding for a fall. I shouldn't have said fooling, because he wasn't fooling. He meant it. In Rick Martin's music, there was, from the first, an element of self-destruction. He expected too much from it, and he came to it with too great a need. And what he expected, he never quite found. He might have found it in another kind of music, but he had no training or any way of coming to know another kind of music, so he stuck to jazz. And to the nervous, crazy life that goes with it. And he made a good thing of it. He made an amazing thing of his own playing. He couldn't even keep pace with it himself. He was, in his way, like Tonio Kroger, man's inspired and bewildered poet, who worked not like a man who works that he may live, but as one who is bent on doing nothing but work, having no regard for himself as a human being, but only as a creator. Now, those are strong words and should surely apply much more truly to a poet like Tonio Kroger than to the man who played hot trumpet in Phil Morrison's band, but I don't think they do. And that's the thing about Rick's story that moves me. The creative urge is the creative urge, no matter where you find it. Rick did what he could do so well that I, for one, won't be likely ever to hear his name without feeling my hair rise. But if you choose to look at it this way, you have to go easy or somebody will say you're arty. Dance music should be criticized in its own terms, and its own terms are such inbred shop talk that no one outside the trade could understand them. How could you say what it was that Rick had and what he stood for without getting out of bounds in one way or another? You could, of course, twist Rick's life into a fiction and write off a clear-cut commercial story about a good-looking young man who went to a good school and then, being musically inclined, went to New York and joined a big-time dance band. You could have him smoke marijuana once or twice just for the hell of it and tell whom he loved and all the rest of it. He could be playing at one of the place names of capitalism, say, the Waldorf Astoria, and between dance sets, he could meet the daughter of some kind of magnate, and it would be love, and our man would never have to play another night's dance music, but just lie happily married on the deck of his wife's yacht, night after night, for the rest of his life, which would be protected and long. But this can't be that. This one has to be the story of a young man who, without even knowing what it was, had a talent for creating music as natural and as fluent as, oh, say, Bach. Rick Martin never would be put down to playing exactly what was written for him. He'd just sit there and fit himself into the heavy going. But when his own turn came, or whenever he saw his chance, he would take off and invent, extempore, some of the freshest, most imaginative music that ever occurred to anyone.